Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. And now, today's program. Today's topic is business insurance claims. Don't get burned with my guest, Bob Freitag of AmeriClaims, Inc. Bob began his insurance career over 20 years ago after graduating from Western Carolina University with a Bachelor of Science degree in business administration while majoring in business law. He was accepted into an internship program with the world's largest insurance broker, Marsh & McLennan, in London, England. He worked in the North American Commercial Brokerage Division and received formal training at Lloyd's of London in London, England. After returning from London, he spent the next 10 years working with insurance companies in claims and underwriting. During this time, he handled major claims for Fortune 500 companies throughout the United States. He handled thousands of hurricane, fire, flood, and tornado property damage claims. But Bob soon realized during that tenure with other insurance companies that many policyholders needed assistance handling their claims. That recognition led him to found AmeriClaims in 2003. Now, AmeriClaims only represents the insured and not the insurance company. So for over a decade now, AmeriClaims has helped insured with every aspect of their property damage claims, whether it is a fire or a flood to their home or business. AmeriClaims public adjusters are there to help their customers navigate through the complexities of filing a large insurance claim. Now, Bob, I want to thank you for being on the show today and talk about this very important area, because many of us are intimidated by dealing with insurance claims, the paperwork, what to fill out, how to interface with our insurance company. And while too many businesses are really underinsured, they're uninsured, and they just don't understand those complexities of getting the right coverage for their operations. And so let's start the conversation today about coverages for businesses, the individual businesses, and walk us through what we need to know as business owners. Thanks for joining me on the show today, Bob. And I want to start out by framing this, because I know so many of my business clients don't know what insurance coverages they should have. So what insurance coverages are like the basics a business should have? And then how should they expand on that so that before they have an issue, they're covered, and then we can proceed with the claims information?
Yeah, absolutely. And really, the main thing to keep in mind is every business is different, and every business has their own exposures and their own risk. So, you know, the first thing that I recommend is any business owner needs to sit down with their agent and make sure that agent is fully aware of exactly what that business is doing and what that business contains within the building, what type of contents or inventory they may have. But the first, the very basics that a business needs to have, if they own the building that they're in, number one, you want to make sure that you're insuring the building on a full replacement cost basis.
What do you mean by replacement cost?
Replacement cost is simply, if you have a claim to your property, they're going to pay you today's prices for that building. They're not going to apply depreciation. There are policies out there called actual cash value, and that is all they pay is the depreciated value of the building. So you have to have replacement cost if you want to be made whole. An example of that is if you're in a building that is maybe 20 years old, on average, an insurance company likes to take about 1% a year in depreciation, and it could be more, it could be less when you have a claim. So say you have a $100,000 claim on that building. If you have a actual cash value policy and it's 20 years old, roughly you're only going to be paid around $80,000 for that building. You have to come out of pocket for the difference. If you have replacement cost, they will pay that full amount of the $100,000 in damages.
That's great to know, because again, I think so many businesses think they're covered, and when they think of what an actual cash value would mean, they're probably thinking that's the market price I could sell the business for. And in fact, it's the depreciated value.
Absolutely. Or we see a lot of people who, you know, maybe they look at what they paid for a building, or maybe they look at what their mortgage amount is. And you don't want to do that. You want to look at what is the full replacement cost of that building and make sure you insure it for that amount. And the truth is, it's not really that much more to get a good replacement policy on a building than an actual cash value policy.
And so in addition to insuring the building, sometimes there are storage buildings or there are common areas, there are things in that. So are there add-ons in that, or is that considered part of the building when you're doing it?
Well, and again, that's where you have to have that conversation with your agent. Typically, anything within your building is going to be covered under that building limit. If you have other structures on the property, you will have to add those separately. So you will want to make your agent know that maybe you have some buildings that maybe they're not attached, or storage buildings or something like that separate from the main building. Make sure they're all scheduled on the policy.
And so when we're insuring the building, does that also mean like we're insuring all the infrastructure type things like HVAC systems, all of those kind of things that are sort of the building but not the building?
Correct. Now, a good way to think about it is, if you were to turn the building upside down and things were to fall out, those things would be the contents. They're not permanently attached. They're not bolted down. They're not hardwired in. So anything like cabinets, HVAC, things like that that are really attached to the building and you wouldn't take them with you when you moved out are considered part of the building.
That's a great way to think about it. So if we picked up the building and shook it, the things that rattle around and could fall out the windows are things that are contents.
Those are generally going to be contents, correct?
And that means we need a separate policy for those.
It's the same policy, but you need a different line of coverage. So you've got your really three components to your policy. You have the building coverage, the content coverage, and then if you have any business interruption coverage.
And what's business interruption coverage?
Okay, if you have a covered loss to your business and your business has to be shut down, you're not able to, open for business, you're not able to generate any income, a business interruption policy will cover your expenses and or your loss of income while you're closed due to your claim.
So the loss of income means it's going to replace our revenue that we're not generating?
It will. And the policy looks at your net income that you've been generating. So when you have a claim, usually the insurance companies will want to go back and they'll want to see, proof of what your net income was over the past 2, 3, 5 years, maybe. And
Okay.
business interruption claims can get really tricky. There's a lot of ins and outs in those. Something else that is covered is extra expense. And extra expense is any expenses that a business owner would incur over and above their normal expenses to try to minimize their business interruption claim. A good example of that would be maybe if you have to go down the street and rent a temporary building while your building's being repaired. That's an extra expense and it's going to minimize your business income claim. So if you have that coverage on your policy, but you have to make sure you have it, it will cover that.
What happens when you're more of like a virtual company? So you're operating out of the building, but you can literally take your laptop anywhere and kind of be up and running. Does that impact what's covered?
If you haven't suffered a loss to your income, you may not have a business income claim at the end of that claim.
Okay.
So we tell our customers, let's get the repairs done, let's get everything put back, let's get you back up and running, and then we can gauge income and compare it to last year, make the projections for this year, and see if you truly did have a business interruption or extra expense claim at that point.
Because, at nothing else, it takes so much time and effort to get back and everything organized and your employees somewhere, your equipment going, your files, that, if you were the only billable person, let's say, in your business, then that kind of dip would come from you having to deal with your claims, with all the mechanics of getting back in business. So that would be
Oh,
an,
absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. People don't realize how much time it does take to handle even a small claim. I mean, it can knock you out for several months at a time. We've seen larger claims where a business is shut down for 6 months, 9 months, maybe a year.
Well, and that happens, and we frequently think about it. We don't think about here in the South the snowstorms, but we've had snowstorms in North Carolina that have shut everything down for a day or so, where they've caused power outages or there's been some kind of water main break that the restaurants then couldn't come up for a week or two, and so they were down. And so many of them did not have business interruption insurance, and they just didn't reopen their doors, many of the smaller restaurants and smaller businesses, because they couldn't take that hit for that 2 or 3 week period until everything could be signed off and said, yes, the water's back, we've tested your facilities, everything's fine. And it wasn't something that was in their business, it was beyond their control. But they went out of business because they did not have coverages.
No, that's entirely correct, and we see that all the time too. And again, business interruption is not something that's going to come included in most insurance policies. So you have to sit down with your agent, let them know exactly, what your business is, what the nature is, and if you were forced to shut your doors for a week, 2 weeks, or a month, would you be able to survive that? And if not, then you need a good business interruption policy or coverage attached to your policy.
So, are those coverages in place for if we have tornadoes, snowstorms, hurricanes, all of those types of things?
Any business interruption is covered whenever you have a covered cause of loss. So yes, tornadoes, snowstorms, a hurricane, a fire, anything like that, it would extend coverage.
What about, I think the term is called man-made disasters. What about those?
It really depends on the type of claim. There's a lot of exclusions on the policy, so
Okay.
you've got to go through your policy. Every commercial policy is going to be a little bit different, and you've got to make sure that you've got coverage. Again, the majority of them are going to be covered. And we're in the southeast here. We do see a lot of tornadoes. We do see hail. We see weather events. We can get hurricanes, and those are going to be covered. Something that we just saw not far from us, where I'm located in Charlotte, we had a lot of flooding down in South Carolina.
Right.
A lot of people did not have flood coverage. And in that instance, flood's not covered, therefore you do not have a covered cause of loss. That business interruption would not be covered.
So are flood insurance policies for businesses different than the homeowners policies in that you can get them through your insurance company and not from the government?
No, everything still goes through the government, but you can get a flood policy for a business or a home or a multifamily building.
Okay, that's great to know. So we're talking about we're going to have that building, we're going to have business interruption insurance. What's the next type of policy or coverage we should have?
The other coverage that we see a lot of people maybe being a little bit underinsured on is their inventory, their contents, their stock when they have a claim. And what we tell people to do is kind of take an assessment, once a year, go through your business, take a quick inventory of your computers, your office equipment, what kind of inventory you keep on hand, does your inventory fluctuate? And again, put it on a replacement cost amount to figure out if we had to go out and replace everything in our office tomorrow, how much would it cost us? And then that's what they need to insure their contents for, is that replacement amount of their contents.
And so does that is that subject to that variation? So let's say my business is large, I get most of my sales during the Christmas period, but in the summer I don't have as much inventory. Does that impact when my claim happens? Do I have to recognize or do I just get the coverage for the highest average point in my year?
It depends on the insurance company you have and the policy that you've had. You sit down and talk with your agent. A lot of companies will offer what we call maybe a peak season inventory, where they know your stock is going to fluctuate a lot. So it doesn't necessarily make sense to pay high premiums on a really high inventory level if you only have that inventory for a month or two. But at the same time, you don't want to be way underinsured in those high peak months. So some companies do offer a peak inventory or seasonal inventory allowance, where you can report your values to the insurance company and then pay premiums based upon those values.
And so I see a lot of businesses trying to reduce the value of the inventory that they actually purchase. So they have consigned or they have inventory on spec that they don't have to pay for until they sell it. And so does that impact what kind of coverages they need to have? And should they push back then on whoever they're taking that consigned inventory from to have coverages and document that that's covered?
Absolutely. When you've got maybe inventory on consignment, or maybe you're leasing equipment or something along those lines, review those agreements up front and see, number one, who's going to be responsible for those. And if you have a large inventory on hand that you do not own, but it's in your possession or your care, custody, and control, as the insurance companies like to say, you need to make sure that your policy is going to cover those in the event of a loss.
Okay, so we know we're typically underinsured there. Some of us are uninsured for floods. We've got to make sure everything's at replacement cost. What's the next policy that we need to be aware of?
Well, what I tell people, again, I think we kind of touched upon it a little bit earlier, is but know your business in and out, and make sure your agent knows your business in and out. We see a lot of different exclusions in policies after claims occur. Let's say you're in a building, maybe it's an older building, and it has sustained a water damage claim or maybe a small fire. And then we find out you've got asbestos in your property, and
Ouch.
asbestos has to be removed and abated, and it gets very expensive to do it. Some commercial policies out there will exclude asbestos. So you need to make sure your policy is not one of those that exclude asbestos, in the event you have a claim and you have to remediate it.
Well, and I guess that would go to similarly to mold remediation and other kind of contaminants. So, tying it back to what we were talking about, business interruption insurance, if something like that would happen, would it be considered a business interruption?
Only if it's a covered cause of loss.
Okay.
And most insurance policies today are excluding mold. So, or they'll throw in maybe a little allowance to do some mold remediation, like 5,000, maybe 10,000 on a commercial policy. But if you just purely have a mold claim and you didn't have a water loss or something that caused it, you may have an issue with coverage there on your business interruption side.
Okay, so we've really got to make sure that when we're sitting down with our agent, we're understanding our building was built in the 50s or 60s. It probably has asbestos somewhere in it, that if we have an issue, we need to be aware of what's not covered in the event. If it's not a plumbing related thing or something of that nature, a roof leak, then our mold issues may not be there, and so we need to be aware in how we're managing our building. But we also need to be aware that if it shuts down the building, it may not be covered for business interruption.
That would be a very fair statement, absolutely.
What else would happen? So let's say I own the building, I'm operating in the building, but I also have tenants. What happens if something in my building causes them to have their business interrupted? What kind of coverage would I have for that, and what policy would cover something like that?
You, as a building owner, are not going to be able to obtain a policy to cover your tenants. So the tenant is going to be responsible for getting their own insurance policy, and that's a great point, because we see that so many times, where the building owner may have insurance, and then the tenant gets in there, has a lease, they're doing business, everything's going great. Then somebody has a claim, and they find out that the tenant doesn't have insurance. That's very common. So, building owners, make sure your tenants do have insurance. Again, it's very affordable, but they need to be insuring their contents. They need to be insuring their business interruption. And that way, the building owner can put his building back. The tenant can be re make a claim for his things and recover a business interruption claim while he's down. And then hopefully the tenant can move back into that building, and it's a win-win for everybody.
Well, and as a building owner, I would think I would want to annually get a copy of my tenant's business insurance policy or something saying it's in force, they are covered, at least to some level, correct?
That's a great way to protect the owner, absolutely.
So, okay, we're covering our building, we're covering our business interruption, we're talking about our contents, our inventory. What's next?
One of the we it kind of relates along the line of the asbestos and the mold, but something that we see a lot on older buildings is when you have a claim and you have to go pull a building permit from your local municipality, they're now going to make you bring that building up to code. So even if a part of the building wasn't necessarily affected by the claim, but maybe you had real old electrical in it, or maybe you didn't have it sprinklered and now it has to be sprinklered, they can make that building owner bring that building up to code, today's code. So you want to make sure, again, you sit down with your insurance agent, make sure you have code upgrade coverage on your policy.
And I know that happens with one of the local businesses up here that actually set up in one of the larger, I'm going to call it a historic home, so built probably 90 years ago. And when they got in there for something, they had knob and tube electrical, so the whole the whole building had to be rewired, the new panel
yes.
outside, that led to something else, the plumbing had to be upgraded, the sprinklers had to go in, smoke detectors and all these different things had to go in, and then I think the boiler system or whatever they were using for heat wasn't up to code, and suddenly this one little electrical thing was hundreds of thousands of dollars of construction and rewire. And so all of that would, that ripple effect stuff would be covered whenever that up to code policy comes into effect.
That's exactly correct. That's exactly correct. And again, most business policies don't automatically give you code upgrade coverage. So, you know, even a building 5 years old, you can have new codes today. So the electric changes every year, sheetrock, firewalls. So just because maybe you're in a newer building, it's still a good idea to have some code upgrade coverage. And you kind of tell your agent, yeah, maybe I need 10,000, or if you know it's an older building, a much larger building, you might need $50,000 or $100,000 of code upgrade coverage.
Yeah, I know this particular business had no business interruption insurance, and they had nothing that covered that. And so therefore, well, it was touch or go whether they were going to be able to do it. And I think they were fortunate they had enough equity in the property that they were able to take that equity out of the property, that they owned the building and still stay in business. But you just really don't understand the ripple effects of some small thing suddenly making everything just sort of cascade in a domino effect, saying, well, you touch this, now you got to touch that. And if you're touching that, that means nobody can work in your building. And suddenly you're scrambling to find that space to operate in. And it's just one thing after another.
You're absolutely correct. And we see it every day, too. And that's why it is the job of the insured to let their agent know, you know, what their risk is, what their exposure is, and then make sure, try to make sure that you have the worst case scenario planned for and covered, so that when it does happen, you know, you'll be okay and you'll survive. You've worked too hard to get your business to where it is, and you don't want to lose it all over maybe a small claim.
Well, and something else that I notice more and more that are putting businesses at risk are the use of company vehicles, commercial vehicles, the drivers they hire for that, and then having employees use their personal vehicles to do work for the company. So can we kind of talk about those policies right now too?
I'll be happy to touch upon those a little bit. It's not really something that we delve a whole lot into. We focus more on the property side of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because I know we're out there and, you know, they have delivery drivers or even their sales forces are going out there, and sometimes they'll provide a vehicle and they'll have insurance on that, but they don't always check to see the licensure, or do people have DUIs, do they even have a valid license, and those kind of things. And so that's, you know, that's something I think our listeners and our business owners need to be aware of, and we won't go into it in this call. We'll do it another day. But that's just something I think everybody needs to be aware of. And everybody out there being an Uber driver or those kind of things too need to be aware of the impact of using their personal vehicle for an activity like that, and their coverages are normally invalidated when they're doing that.
Well, and I do talk to a lot of agents, insurance agents, you know, just because of the nature of the business that we're in. And you bring up a very good point. And this goes to all business owners out there. You, especially if you're entrusting them with vehicles or going into people's homes or businesses, you do need to know background of all your employees and all your subs and all folks that are going to be out there working on your behalf, you know, whether they're driving or just entering somebody's house. So background checks are a great idea. And the last thing that you want is to have somebody driving one of your vehicles. They have an accident and they had a pretty extensive history and you didn't even know about it.
Right.
So, and usually when you go to insure those people, your agent should be, you know, pulling motor vehicle reports and all that. But it's a good idea for business owners to know, you know, who's representing us and who's going out there and meeting our customers.
And again, that's working with your agent to make sure that they're aware that I have two company cars, or I have employees using their personal cars to do business for us. What kind of coverages do I need?
I can't stress enough that you've got to communicate with your agent, because your agent does not know the ins and out of your company. Only you as the owner know it.
And that's something I hammer all the time with my clients, because it's like, it's the same thing with your lawyer. Your lawyer can't advise you if they don't know what's going on. They only can tell you based on the information they have, and that's what the insurance agents do too. They can only help you be covered if you're telling them honestly everything that's going on in your business.
That's exactly correct. And you bring up a very good point. The first thing that you do when you go out to get insurance is what? You fill out an application.
Right.
And you've got to be as honest on that application, because, you know, insurance claims are tracked. They know how many claims you've had in the past. They know typically how much those claims were paid out. So while I understand, you know, especially larger companies, they may not remember all the details, but be honest as you recall on those applications, because when you do have a claim, they can pull those applications out. If there's an issue with it, it could be an issue on your claim going forward.
Well, and also whenever you go to pay your annual, your premiums, if you're paying them annually or quarterly or however you're going to pay them, take that opportunity to have your agent sit down with you again and go back over what's changed in the past year and what's going to change in the year ahead. Because are you expanding, adding people, different equipment, getting a new server, going to have two locations, all of those kind of things. You need to have that conversation, and that's what they're there for.
I completely agree with that, and I do wish more people would do that.
Invest a little time. Go to lunch with your agent.
Yes, absolutely.
Take your agent to lunch. So what other policies should we be aware of and be really wanting to have for our businesses?
You know, something else that we see, if a company, maybe they're taking tools or equipment from job to job, or maybe they're bouncing around, you may want to look at a good inland marine policy. And what that is, the industry kind of calls it a floater policy, and it's going to cover various equipment, tools, machinery, whether it be at the location of your business or on a job site, or maybe even in a van or a truck going somewhere. So if you're moving equipment or property from job to job or around quite a bit, inland marine policy is what you're going to need on those items.
Now, that's an interesting name for a policy that covers that. I'm sure there's some history with that.
Yeah, I think the history, you know, the insurance started back years ago with Lloyd's insuring ships, and they called it marine insurance. And then when they got on the land and they were moving things around from land from the ships, they picked up the inland marine.
Interesting.
So it's kind of stuck. Yeah.
Yeah, because when I would look down a list of policies for my business, I would not necessarily think of inland marine coverage for my land-based traditional business.
Yeah. So things that are going to be moved around from job to job are not necessarily staying in one location, because if you don't have that coverage and you get that property away from your premises, a lot of times that's going to be excluded.
So does that include our computers, our iPads, anything that we would have operating out of, let's say, our car office when we're on the road as salespeople or we're traveling for speaking engagements? Is that the policy that covers that?
It would. It would. You know, if you're out there doing a trade show somewhere and maybe you're taking $10,000, $50,000 worth of contents or stock with you to a trade show, it's going to cover that away from your premises.
That's great to know, because sometimes even your trade show booths are like $50,000 for the stuff that you have in there. So you don't necessarily think about that. And then the inventory you might take and things of that nature. So that's a good one. What's the next one you can think of for us?
You know, this is something that we see a lot. It's more, and again, kind of going back to how you value things, we see on commercial policies what they call as a co-insurance requirement. And what that is, it's simply – It's usually written in the form of a percentage on your policy, and they want to make sure that you have a minimum amount of insurance. In other words, they want to make sure that you're insuring the property to its true value so they can be charging the correct premiums for it. And if you're not insured properly or in compliance with that co-insurance amount, you could be penalized when you have a claim.
So where would we normally see a proviso of that nature? So would it be in our leases? Would it be in purchase agreements for buildings? Where would we see these that kind of coinsurance requirement?
The only place you really see coinsurance requirement is going to be on your insurance policy, and usually it's on the declaration page, and then it is kind of included back in all the forms and endorsements. But on your declaration page, it's going to be written next to, usually it's written next to your building limit. So say it'll say building, $200,000 is your limit, and then maybe an 80% coinsurance requirement. So what that means is you've always got to carry at least 80% of that building's full replacement cost at the time you have a claim. So let's say that maybe you haven't kept up with adjusting your values, and now that building is worth $300,000. 80% would mean you should have carried $240,000 of insurance, 80% of the $300,000, but you only carry $200,000, so you're not in compliance with your coinsurance requirement. Now that you've had a claim, and that's the only time it comes up is when you have a claim, they're going to penalize you on that difference.
All right, so they're not going to cover the full $300,000 value then.
That's
they're
correct.
Going to cover the $200,000 that you were insured for, even though you have full replacement value coverage, because you didn't up the valuation to get the right coverage. They're going to disallow that $100,000.
Well, and it's more on a percentage basis, and it gets a little tricky, but they may not even cover the full $200,000. Okay, say if you had a $100,000 loss, and if you're 20% underinsured, all of a sudden now they're going to apply a coinsurance penalty to that $100,000 claim. You may only get $80,000. So you want to make sure if you have a coinsurance requirement on your policy that you're building, and it can apply to contents too, that they're insured to value, to be in compliance with the coinsurance. And it's going to be in the form of a percentage on your policy. It's usually 80, 90, or 100%.
So it's like every year or every couple years, I end up having to upgrade computer equipment. And so, and every year, of course, computer equipment becomes more expensive. So when I go to my pay my annual fee and I sit down with my agent, I need to make them aware that, yes, I still have a server, but it's a more expensive server than the one I had previously. So where before I might have had a $2,000 server, I have a $5,000 server. And so now I need to let them know that, especially if it's I have that 80, 90, or 100% coinsurance.
That's exactly correct. Exactly correct. And it kind of goes back to, you know, assessing your values regularly, annually, or at least every couple years, and then making sure your insurance is sufficient to take care of that in the event of a claim.
Yeah, and I don't think we always think about that, because you look down your list and this is okay, you know, where you're covered for a server. But if you got your business coverage 10 years ago and you haven't sat down and gone back and say, well, that server may have cost you $1,500 10 years ago, and it was a much smaller server, and then you just upgraded, and you have 50 employees, and you have a more, you know, a $10,000 server, and you have this thing, and you have that thing. You really need to kind of walk in with the prices of all of your equipment and say, yes, I have a server, but it's not that $1,500 one. It's this $10,000 one. I have laptops. They're not the $1,000 ones we used to have. They're the $6,000 ones because we're doing this stuff with it. It's going through literally and thinking, am I really covered? And I need to make sure that I am, so that replacement value really happens in the event of some catastrophe.
That's exactly correct. And every business owner that I've ever talked to, when they've had a claim and I start reviewing their policy and I point out that they have a coinsurance requirement, typically the answer that I get is, you know, I didn't even know I had that and I don't even understand it. And, you know, that's where agents need to do a good job of explaining this is a commercial policy and you need to make sure you have sufficient limits to be in compliance with coinsurance if it is a requirement on your policy. And there are a few policies that we see on the commercial side that don't have the coinsurance requirement. I prefer one of those to having a coinsurance requirement. But if you do have one, just make sure you've got good limits to cover all of your exposure. And, you know, you should be okay on that.
Well, and I know one of my clients just was required to have a new, because of some compliance thing, a new $25,000 piece of equipment that will be traveling with their teams out on the road. So we're looking now at that, and so I need to make sure that they have the proper coverage for that and that it's covered when it's off their site, when it's on the road with the guy sitting in the truck, because can't afford to replace too many $25,000 pieces of equipment if it gets stolen or something happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's all about, you know, when you do make a big purchase like that, you know, let your agent know. Call your agent and say, hey, this is what we've got. Are we going to be covered in the event they have a claim? Not only call them, but email them and get it in writing, too.
Yes, we always like everything in writing.
We do, especially with insurance.
With anything where it involves money or guarantees, warranties, and those kind of things, or conversations about how things are going to be settled or how things are going to proceed. So, okay, so we've been talking about our equipment, our buildings, the furnishings, these exceptions, this lovely inland marine policy. What else do we need to know?
Again, it kind of goes back to what's your exposure at your business?
Let's say we're an IT company. Is there anything an IT company needs to have that another business might not need to have?
Well, it kind of depends. I mean, do you have a lot of servers? Do you have a lot of computer equipment there that you're responsible for? You know, one of the big things is equipment breakdown. And again, every commercial policy is different. So you've got to go in and read your policy, try to understand it. And are you going to be covered in the event of a computer breakdown? And usually there are extra coverages that you can purchase for electronic data processing, for computers, for servers, breakdown, and things like that.
What about policies that relate to us? And it may not be your field, and I apologize if it's not, but what if somebody hacks or holds our data hostage?
You know, I have seen actually more insurance companies providing for like identity coverage. If they come in and they, you know, steal your contacts or your software or things like that. So I think that's becoming more of a bigger issue. And I think there are companies out there that will write that, you know, so if that's an issue for you, maybe you have this huge database of consumers that you've got to protect. And, you know, if somebody does go in and hack that, I think there is going to be coverage, depending upon the company, to come in and clean that up, maybe recreate databases. So again, that's something that you sit down, have a conversation with your insurance agent. If that agent can't offer that coverage, you need to shop around and try to find somebody who can.
Well, and it just gets down to being aware in your business, because we're managing risk through these insurance policies. And so we just need to be aware of where our risk occurs or could occur. Now it becomes more and more about identity theft, hacking, ransomware, people stealing equipment, break-ins, man-made disasters, natural disasters, and just all of those kind of things that happen in the course of life changing and business changing. And so just doing that self-assessment, sitting down with a qualified agent and an agent that's willing to say, hey, we don't have that, but I have a contact that I can put you in touch with that does that kind of coverage.
That's exactly correct. There's a lot of independent agents out there, and they can shop a lot of different insurance companies for you. And, you know, I think I mentioned Lloyd's of London earlier, but, you know, if you have a really unique exposure, or maybe you don't have the greatest loss history, you know, a good independent agent can even find you some coverage over at Lloyd's of London.
So when you say not the greatest loss history, meaning you've used your policies frequently.
Yeah, you've had a number of claims on your record. And unfortunately, you know, when you file claims, it does hurt you. It's kind of like, you know, when you get speeding tickets, you know, it hurts your auto insurance. When you have large claims or even small claims, it hurts your loss history. So, you know, my advice to people is we tell businesses – have higher deductibles on your policy. Number one, that's going to save you premiums. But number two, you don't want to report the small claims. You just really want to save the insurance for that really big one. But at the same time, make sure it's a deductible that you can afford. You know, don't put a $50,000 deductible on your policy if that's going to, you know, really hurt your business. But if you can afford a $5,000 or a $10,000 deductible and then just you take care of the small stuff and save the insurance for the big stuff. That's the best advice I can give people on that.
Well, and it's, yeah, I'll kind of play devil's advocate here, because it's like we carry insurance in case of an issue, but if we use the insurance for those issues that are not caused by our choices, we start getting at this risk of we're not going to be able to have coverage. And so that, you know, when you're sitting here as a business owner, it's like, okay, an employee had a car accident, somebody hit them beyond our control, but it was an uninsured motorist. So now I have to make a claim. You are in South Carolina and suddenly the heavens open and there's a flood. I have to make a claim. And sometimes I hear from my clients, it's like, well, I had to make the claim because it was a big loss, but now they don't want to cover me. And so, you know, I hear from the business, it's like, well, what do I get for this? Now I've had insurance for 10 years. I've made one claim. Yes, it was a big one. And now I can't get coverage. And it just seems, you know, one of the stressors for the smaller businesses when things pile up in those, you know, that little period of time when some, it's like things happen in threes. What do you tell businesses that are like that, where they've just sort of had this string of bad luck and they're out there trying to get insurance?
That's a great question. This is what I tell our customers. You know, you want to do all you can to try to minimize your claims. And there's certain things that we can do. You know, you want to, if you have tenants, you know, you want to kind of keep a close eye on what your tenants are doing in your property. You want to make sure buildings are well lit, not left vacant to avoid theft and break-ins. You want to do anything you can to minimize fires, you know, have extinguishers, make sure safety precautions are followed. So you as a business owner have some duties to make sure you can minimize your claims going forward. But let's face it, I mean, things do happen. You mentioned the floods, hailstorms, tornadoes. There's nothing any of us can do to prevent those.
Crazy drivers out on the highway going 80 reading the newspaper.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, so that happens. Stuff happens. And the fact is, when you do file a large claim, typically you're going to get dropped. At a minimum, they're going to raise your premiums. And if you go a couple years with a clean record, your premiums will come back down. But if you get dropped, it's not the end of the world. You just have to shop around and find another company who will pick you up. You may be charged a little bit higher premium till your loss ratio comes down. But it's crazy. But the fact is, insurance companies prefer to have people who aren't going to file claims.
Funny about that business model. But yeah, it's just, I mean, it gets frustrating for clients, especially when they have a lot of moving parts and they're, you know, they're sitting at a stoplight and somebody didn't do due diligence on their employee and a tractor trailer rear ends them. The employee's injured, the vehicle's totaled, you know, and it's a key employee. And so that scientist no longer able to do the research that was going to produce their product to go to market. And so this ripple effect happens. And so they're sitting there, it's like, you know, why is one more thing happening? My insurance company says, well, we're dropping you. And it's like, I said, all I was doing was sitting here doing my business and someone else didn't do their business right. And so now my business is at risk and my insurance company is dropping me. So it's just kind of a hard, one more hard knock sometimes that happens. Insurance is necessary. And like you said, we need to mitigate and be proactive, but we just also have to be aware that sometimes it's going to happen.
Stuff happens, right? And yeah, I mean, we can only control the things that we can control, and there's no sense worrying or stressing over those things that are out of our control. And if people know, okay, if I do file a lot of small claims, you know, two or three small claims, I'm likely to get dropped, then don't file the small claims. Increase those deductibles, save it for that big event. And then when it happens, and should you get dropped or canceled, then you will be able to shop the market and find another insurance company to take you. So the main thing is have that protection in place. You sleep better at night. You know your business will carry on in the event of a catastrophe, and you're covered. And it's just one of those necessary evils that we need in business.
And we thank God for the free market system that allows for competition, and there's more than one insurance company.
You got it.
So we're doing replacement costs. We're talking about all of these critical things. Are there additional things that we should think about when we're going to go out and shop for these policies? What should we take with us? What should we be aware of when we start creating that list that we're going to go out? Let's say we've been in business 5 years. We've never had insurance on anything. And they're listening to this broadcast and they're saying, okay, I need to get started. Where do I start? What do I need to bring with me? And how do I decide who to call first?
Great question. You know, if you're just going out getting insurance, or maybe you're renewing your policy, if you have a policy to take with you, it's a good idea to have that policy in front of you so you can kind of go over the limits with a different company. If you're just starting out, again, sit down, take a little bit of time and figure out what is your risk or what is your exposure. Do you own the building? Okay, if you own the building, you have to insure the building. Start there. Then do you have contents or personal property or stock in there? Okay, figure out how much you need there and go there. Look at your business interruption. Will you need business interruption? And then you can kind of, you know, add all the other little extras to it when you sit down and have a conversation with your agent. So it's just really knowing all about your business, knowing, you know, what your major purchases have been, knowing if you lost everything today, what would you need to be able to go out tomorrow and replace it so that you could kind of keep running. Well, so if you start there, I think you'll be ahead of the game for sure.
So we've done our homework. We've got our coverages. We've been being proactive. Everything's in place. We have replacement cost value. We've got our inland marine policies. And we're setting in South Carolina. The floods come. My building is flooded. My equipment's damaged. You know, things take a while to clear out. The floodwaters to recede. The mold starts to build up. I need to gut the building. The building has asbestos. Help me, Bob. I need to file a claim. Help me.
So you've got a disaster on your hands right
see,
there.
See, I like those scenarios so that we can cover everything. So
the worst case scenario. Okay, so let's just talk about claims in general. What do you do when you have a claim? I mean, the event that you described, there's 1,000 questions that go through my mind, but this is going to apply to really any claim a business suffers. The first thing that you need to do, number one, is when it's safe to do so, whatever you need to do to protect that property from further damage, try to go ahead and do that, okay? If you've got a hole in your roof, maybe you want to get the roof tarped. If you've got doors or windows that are broken in or kicked in, you know, secure those. If you've got a lot of standing water inside your place, you know, try to get that out of there. The policy state, you've got to do anything you can to kind of minimize any additional damage. Okay. So do that. The next thing that you need to do is you do need to call your insurance company, report a claim. So, you know, whether it happens, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock at night, you can usually call an 800 number and get a claim started. At that point, it's kind of a fine line. You don't want to do too much until the insurance company sends out their representative, their adjuster, to inspect your damages. So you're kind of in a waiting pattern there. If we're dealing with a fire or something along those lines, a lot of times they're going to want to come out and they're going to want to investigate what happened. So if you get in there and start throwing things away and disturbing the scene and they can't verify how the claim occurred or how the fire started, you could be exposing yourself to some consequences there by doing too much.
So here's a question. So I know during times of flood, having been through one with my family, that the government will frequently send in people to start cleaning things up before the insurance adjusters get in during hurricanes, major floods, and those kind of things. And so things do get moved, get cleaned out, get ripped out, get hauled off just because of the nature of them sending in the National Guard, FEMA people, and those kind of things. So what happens then if I filed a claim and through nothing that I could control, I was ordered to clean out everything or haul out things that they were going to take off or they did it for me. What happens to my claim then? Is that somehow mitigated because that was beyond my control?
If it's beyond your control, they should still proceed to cover that. Again, you do have to kind of document, you know, what you had, what was thrown out, typically my experience, though, we don't see, you know, the government agencies or other companies coming in and going into your house and throwing things away. Now, they may come down and clear the streets and make it, you know, so vehicles can pass through and get through, things like that. But typically they won't come in and start tossing things from your house. Usually we see homeowners doing that, or we see a little aggressive contractors coming in and doing that too quickly.
Right.
So, you know, again, take photos when you can. That certainly helps. But every insurance policy states that that insurance company is entitled to inspect the damaged property at any time. So if you have a claim and you throw everything away and then you claim all the stuff and you can't prove it, you could have a problem.
So what happens if I take the video, if I take the photos, and it takes a month for them to get an insurance adjuster out just because of the number of claims that they have in the area, and then it's that far, that widespread?
Yeah, and again, I mean, we do see that with hurricanes and catastrophes and things like that. And again, you do have a burden to try to do anything you can to minimize the damage. But hopefully within that month, you at least have an adjuster assigned. You can email that person and you can say, okay, you know, we've got wet sheetrock. Can I go ahead and start removing the sheetrock? I've got wet contents. Can I at least pull those out of the house, maybe get them in the front yard so that I don't have a major mold claim on my hands, which then typically they don't like to cover.
Right.
So you want to be in touch with that adjuster. And I will say, typically they do get out there much quicker. In the event of a really bad catastrophe, you know, a Katrina, a Sandy, it could be a couple weeks. It could be 4 weeks. But typically that's not the case. But again, get permission in writing for what you're doing. And, you know, just make sure they're okay with it.
And you can always take photos all along the way. We all have our phones, smartphones,
sure,
and everything that take it away and document process by process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just, you know, when possible, I tell people don't throw away everything until the adjuster has come out and put their eyes on it and they've approved you disposing of it. But, you know, inventorying your claim is just one step. You know, then you have to price it. And say 2 or 3 months down the road, you start getting pushback from the insurance company on how much they're going to pay. It's helpful if you still have that damaged property to say, no, actually it was this type of, you know, laptop and not this other cheaper brand that you're trying to replace it for me.
Right. And then again, but it's like at some point, I guess it depends on how fast the process goes, but it can really drag on and it becomes, getting back up and running becomes the business interruption less than the event was, right?
It can. You know, we see this again all the time. Even a small claim, as you mentioned earlier, you know what, now we have to get the claim settled. We have to go through and settle it with the insurance company. We have to get funds in so we can start our repairs. And then you have to go down and pull permits. You have to have the city inspect the repairs. And people are always amazed when we come out and I tell them, yeah, it's going to be 3, 6, 9 months, maybe a year before you're back up and fully running. And they just don't understand. It is a slow process, but there's a lot of steps that have to be followed to make sure you're made whole throughout the whole event.
Well, and I think it's extremely intimidating for the policyholder to be dealing with the insurance company and trying to handle this on themselves. And so having someone like you in their corner that understands the insurance industry, that can understand what the policy says it does, and hold our hands as we go through the recovery process with our claims, that just makes so much sense because you speak the language.
Well, exactly. I mean, we've been doing this a long time, and I mean, you hit it right on the head. When you're a business owner and you've been involved in a claim, you don't want to have to deal with the day-to-day activities that you're going to have to do when you have a claim. You want to try to focus on your business. You want to take care of customers. Maybe you want to find another location and try to keep your business going. And if you're trying to oversee a claim, maybe, you know, do an inventory, interview contractors. I mean, that's a full-time job right there.
So it's
good to know that there's companies out there that can help businesses when they do have large claims.
So how does someone come to work with you? And we have like 2 minutes to do this, but how do they get in touch with you? And then how do they work? How do they get you to work with them?
Well, what we do is we go out there immediately. The sooner the better somebody gets us involved, then we can get things going in the right direction. We'll meet with their insurance representatives. We'll agree on what needs to be done. We bring in our team. We inventory. We put together estimates. I mean, we do the entire claim for them. We're licensed public insurance adjusters. We are licensed by the state. And, you know, they can find us online, AmeriClaims.com.
And they can also follow you on Twitter, correct?
They can.
And your Twitter handle is?
At AmeriClaims.
And so I want to thank you, Bob, for being on here. And if you could give everybody like one more tip as to what the first thing is, and I think it's going to be that they need to remember when they're dealing with insurance and insurance claims, what would it be?
Ooh, just one tip?
Just one tip.
Just make sure you have the proper coverage in place before a claim happens. And then if you do have a claim, reach out and talk to a public adjuster about that claim.
And again, they can reach you, Bob Freytag, at AmeriClaims.com.
That's exactly correct.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Being on the show.
Thank you.
And until next time, stay focused on the important things in life.